Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Monday, April the 3rd. As we like to do on Mondays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Obviously, we're going to be focusing a great deal on President Trump, the indictment, the fact that it's happening there in New York. You know, they say New York never sleeps, the city that never sleeps. That's the way that song goes. My guess is that there's not going to be a lot of sleeping in New York. In the next couple of days, there's going to be a lot of excitement. So let me say hello to our friend Bill. How are you, Bill? Good to see you again, or good to hear from you again.
Well, we are excited here in New York. Very, very excited. It's a very exciting time. We have a visitor from the South, who flew in. Everybody just can't wait for the game to begin. I mean, this is better than the Subway Series.
Well, I would agree with that because this has never happened before, you know. A president, you know, when something is historic, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's good, just because it happens the first time. And, you know, I share some of your concerns that you've been posting on Urgent Agenda about this thing. So we'll be talking a lot about it, but I want to begin with just a couple of quick things, Bill, because you have said many times on our podcast that we're not a serious country. We're not as serious as we used to be. And I've got a couple of examples that I like to share with you and see if you agree with me that these are examples of not being serious. The first one is that Department of Homeland Security, these are the people who are supposed to protect the country, will now allow people or immigrants who come in or migrants, whatever they're called, they can now change their gender on their documentation. So if they were a man before they came in, they can now be a woman on the documentation.
Yes.
I find that, I mean, just absurd. I mean, how in the world, first of all, what is their job is to check who comes in. So if we don't know who came in, how is that good for the country, Bill?
It's not good for the country, and the people who are behind this kind of thing are not interested in what's good for the country. They're interested in what's good for their ideology. Remember, many of these really extreme ideas originate on the far political left, which has never cared about the country. To them, the United States is trash. It's an imperialist country. It is a country controlled by certain interests. We are not represented. We're not accepted as citizens. So when we ask the question, "What's good for the country?" their attitude is, "Why should we care?" And this is what happens when ideology begins to dominate. What is remarkable about the United States historically is that we have not been an ideological nation. We've been an idealistic nation, which is something entirely different. And an idealistic country has a set of ideals. It has a set of basic principles. It has a constitution, perhaps, or a bill of rights, and it enforces and tries to improve those things. But an ideological nation is not a nation that has any of those things. It's a nation that is stripped bare, like the old Soviet Union, and an ideology is established, and everything must fit within the ideology. That is where we're heading, and it's a tragedy.
It is, and in this case, we're talking about national security, because if somebody can come in and change their gender, well, we don't really know then who came in. We don't know what background this person has outside of the country.
We don't. Their attitude is that they're not changing the gender; they're simply declaring a gender.
Okay, there you go.
In the world of ideology, they had no gender. They had whatever gender was assigned to them by the oppressive class,
Okay, there you go. So that's a good explanation. I think that's an excellent explanation. Now, here's the other one. This one is silly, but I guess only silly things can happen at this time in our history. You have a young man who I guess now is a woman. He is celebrating 365 days of being a woman. I didn't know it was that easy to become a woman, but anyway, that's another topic. And now she's actually doing advertising for women's products, not just this light beer, but other women's products, dresses, fashion. How is it that, I mean, wouldn't that be insulting to the feminist, Bill? I'm expecting feminists at any moment to object to this, but there's total silence, Bill.
Well, you know, there's a remarkable thing going on in our country that might be called the silence of the feminists. Have you noticed that on the issue of men claiming to be women and participating in women's sports and destroying women's sports, that the so-called women's movement is silent? Have you noticed the fact that there is a revolution going on in Iran, which is led by women who are being thoroughly oppressed, and the women's so-called women's movement in this country has nothing to say? I don't even know if we have a women's movement left. Nobody reports on it. I mean, the people who claim to be so interested in the women's rights are quite silent. So, you know, again, ideology, whatever is good for the ideology, but what is the ideology of the women's movement? Well, sadly, it must finally be accepted that the basic ideology of the women's movement is Marxism. And I think that is now the guiding principle, that other things are irrelevant. Women are even irrelevant. I haven't seen anything done by the so-called women's movement to advance the interests of women. And we continue, and this is, quite relevant, we continue to elect people to public office, especially in big cities, who accept that notion of ideology. If you've noticed in the last few years, there is a story out of Los Angeles which just had a mayoral election and elected a far-left follower of Fidel Castro as mayor. There is now an idea surfacing to depopulate the jails of Los Angeles, which means to release as many people from those jails as possible. I mean, this is madness. It's absolute madness. But when you elect an ideologist, that is what happens. By the way, there will be a very important election tomorrow in Chicago. But people are unaware of it. It is barely reported on national television, where they will elect a new mayor. Apparently it's a neck-and-neck race. It is very racialized. There's one white candidate and one black candidate. If they elect the black candidate, I don't say this because of race, but because of ideology, they will be right back where they started from, because he's a follower of the woke left. The white candidate is a revolutionary in the good way, and I don't say that again because of his race, but because those are just his views. The white candidate seems to have a slight edge. It's sad that we have to discuss these things by race and say the white candidate and the black candidate. But Chicago is in desperate trouble, and they have a choice between the future and the past. Let's see what choice they make.
Right. And there's also a very important election for the Supreme Court in Wisconsin. And I'm not sure if it's the same day, but where you also have the same contrast. Now, there are two white candidates in Wisconsin, but one is very conservative and the other one's very liberal. And you know, it's all coming down to ideology, too. I mean, basically, if the liberal is elected to the Supreme Court, she's already promising, more freedom for women and abortion rights and all these kinds of things, you know. And it is crazy to me, Bill. Maybe you have a different idea, but if we're going to have an election for the Supreme Court, why does it turn into an election for, like, Congress, where you've got two people arguing about ideas? I thought the Supreme Court was supposed to apply the law. I mean, so whether you're liberal or conservative, you're supposed to apply the law, and yet these elections, you know, you've got money from the outside coming in supporting the liberal candidate, I'm sure supporting the conservative candidate. I don't like the Supreme Court like that, Bill. I don't think that's good for the state or in the country we don't have it. But I don't think Supreme Court justices should be elected like that, Bill, and basically a partisan election, Bill.
I think you're absolutely right. And, of course, it's the same thing when the president selects a Supreme Court justice or nominates a Supreme Court justice, the nomination then sent to the Senate for approval or disapproval. It's turned into just a contest of ideology. The last Supreme Court justice to be named by an American president was Justice Brown, who is on the court now. Joe Biden made it very plain that he would only consider women of color. Now, that itself is outrageous. It mocks the Constitution. It mocks the civil rights movement. But the country was very sanguine about it. You know, they get away with these things. I don't think there was one reporter at any press conference when Justice Brown was nominated who asked the president, shouldn't you simply nominate the best judge for the job? But that idea of quality, that idea of excellence, of mastery, that seems to have gone out the window. Now everything is based on ideology. It is a very sad day for the United States.
It is. It is a very sad day. You're exactly right. Well, let's talk about the big historic thing happening up in your city of New York. I mean, just absolutely incredible. You said the President Trump was flying in, and he may be already there. I don't know. I know I saw a little bit during lunchtime. I saw him take off from Florida, so he must be getting very close to landing. And he's coming for this trial, not the trial, I guess. He's going to be, call it when you go to the courthouse,
arraignment.
That's it.
Yes.
An arraignment. So he's going to find out what the charges are, and everybody seems to have an opinion on this. But one question I do have, Bill, I don't know if you've heard about this, that apparently somebody is leaking out that there are 34 counts, and it is illegal to leak something like this. Have you heard anything about that?
I have heard it. There is the leak, what is claimed to be a leak. Well, you know, let's face it. When you're working in the United States Supreme Court and a text of a decision-to-be on Roe v. Wade is leaked and they can't find the leaker and nobody is punished for it, you're going to have more leaks. And this is a perfect example of it. They'll never find out. They're not going to find out who leaked this information. The people working there who investigate – are on the same party line as the people who are doing the leaking. So, you know, what do you say?
Well, I saw Professor Dershowitz say that this was illegal and that somebody should be fined for this, but I don't know who it's going to be. I mean, they'll never be able to prove that the district attorney did it, so I guess maybe the receptionist did it, Bill. That's what happened. The receptionist, they sent her out for coffee, and then she picked up a copy, Bill, and just handed it to a reporter who just happened to be outside the cafeteria.
Yes, or something fell on the floor. Something may have fallen on the floor, and maybe that was it. But look, that's the way things are, and continue to be that way. The press loves leaks. It never asks who the leaker is. Even, you know, you would think on something as serious as this, the arraignment of a former president, that the press would at least make an effort not to go into the gutter. But the press today is largely a tabloid press. I have been monitoring the news reports on the Trump arraignment. I think CNN is disgraceful. They cannot control themselves. Their glee is obvious. This to them is higher ratings because their ratings are based on Donald Trump. You would think that with a 24-hour news cycle, they would bring in some prominent and respected historians to point out that this has never happened before and to ask the simple question why. We have gone through 45 American presidents. In fact, Trump is the 45th. We've never had to indict a former president on anything. This is the first time, and nobody wants to ask the question, why? Why have we gone through 45 presidents and never had to indict anyone? The answer, of course, is that by tradition, we have tried to protect former presidents against this kind of legal harassment. I mean, you have presidents who came from pretty sleazy backgrounds and backgrounds with families that were involved in things that were on the dark side, the Kennedys, the Delanos, who made their money from opium. You had former presidents like Lyndon Johnson, who turned a congressional salary into a multimillion dollar fortune. There are many questions that have been asked, but we haven't asked them in court. Once the president is finished, we ask those questions through journalism or through historians, but we leave the president alone unless, and there was always that understanding, unless that person has committed or is charged to have committed a grievous offense, and we haven't done it yet. This is the first time. And what's the offense? He paid some hush money to a stripper.
Right, yeah. A misdemeanor, I guess, even in New York, right?
Yes.
Or to have messed up the documentation. But was thinking this weekend about the last time we had a president with, you know, potential legal problems. Well, I guess they were real problems. That was President Nixon. And he resigned, as you know, August 1974. President Ford came in, and he pardoned him. And I remember watching all of this on TV, and I remember watching it with my father. And my father said, you know, that's the right thing to do for the country, but he's going to pay for it.
Yes.
He did, of course. But,
you
know, I think Ford understood that it was the right thing to do for the country, but he also understood that there was these people really wanted to get Nixon. Now, maybe there were good reasons, but they wanted to get Nixon way beyond reality. And that's the same thing with Trump. They want Trump. They want to see Trump hanging from a tree. They want the Mussolini end to Trump's life, really, in a way. And how is that good for the country? I mean, somebody explain to me, how is this good to do all of this in light of everything else that's happening in the world that we're going to get into in a few minutes, Bill? How is it good for the country? It reminds me, Bill, forgive me for a quick second, reminds me of the movie Godfather. When they tried to go after the Godfather and then they took revenge on all the others. That's kind of what this is going to turn into, Bill. You know, I indict your guy, you indict my guy. I mean, it's going to be crazy, Bill.
Well, it is. And, you know, maybe we ought to stop thinking about the news as entertainment and bring back the idea of the news as news, because there's no serious discussion of this and the damage it can do. When you start going after former presidents on things like this, it makes every other president vulnerable, and it could affect the way they conduct their office. It could conduct the way they run for office. I want a situation such as we had before, that a former president is left alone, again, with the understanding that if he or she committed a grievous offense, like selling secrets to an enemy nation, that's a grievous offense, that person would go into history and let the historians decide. We should settle political questions at the ballot box, not in the courtroom. And I think it is always a danger when we see politics played out through court decisions, or even great issues played out through court decisions. A court decision is supposed to be an interpretation of the law. It is not supposed to be a political act. And this is bad for the country, and something that you would think would be discussed more thoughtfully. It's not being discussed thoughtfully. I don't know if the current news media, as established, can survive, because it is not doing the job that a news organization should do.
Right. No, and again, we're talking here about we're not trying to defend Donald Trump's relationship with this woman, whatever that relationship was. What we're really talking about, it's an administrative issue, I guess, that how he paid her. I guess that's what the issue is. But it's a misdemeanor.
Yes.
Now, the allegation is that the district attorney wants to turn this into a federal crime. But that was already looked at before, Bill, correct me if I'm wrong, that was already looked at before by the previous fellow, Mr. Vance. And I think even the Biden DOJ looked at it and said, no, let's not go there. So, I mean, what more is there to do other than placate, you know, Trump's life? I mean, how would you like to be a family member of Trump? His son, he's got a teenage son. How would you like to, you know, how would you like to see your dad treated this way? I mean, it's not American. This is the kind of thing, Bill, that you see in the third world. You don't see this in the United States. That's what bothers me, Bill.
Of course. Well, look, again, we look at who's behind it. It's people who have contempt for the United States. The district attorney who is bringing this is a man with a history. He is on the far left of Democratic Party politics. He ran for office pledging to get Trump. Now, I have never heard of anybody running for a judicial or a legal office in the United States who pledges to get a particular guy. That is not proper. It goes beyond the scope of what the office holder is supposed to be doing. As district attorney, he is supposed to pursue prosecutions without fear or favor, not to put everything aside. Many people have said this case has proceeded faster than anyone they've ever seen. Well, of course, it's Donald Trump. And you have this prosecutor with a political history. He is a product of George Soros. He has a terrible record as district attorney. He has failed to prosecute or refused to prosecute a number of very serious crimes. His conviction rate of those things that go to trial is only 49%, which is a very, very poor record. And yet CNN did a profile on him this morning that made him look like Justice Brandeis. I mean, the serious prosecutor, not really going into the details of why he's so objectionable. But, you know, when they can expect news coverage like that, they realize they can get away with a lot, and they are getting away with a lot.
Well, the Attorney General of New York also ran for office basically saying the same thing. We're going to get Trump. We're going to get Trump. And you have to wonder, if the Bar Association – why doesn't the Bar Association say to these people, you're not supposed to do that? I mean, that almost disqualifies you as an attorney, Bill. I would think it does. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, nor familiar with the Bar Association, but you would think that the Bar Association has higher standards than allow a candidate for attorney general or district attorney to run a campaign like that, Bill.
Well, that's an excellent point and an excellent question. The bar associations are silent. You have cases going forward against a former president, not only in New York, but in other places that seem to be awfully dubious. Again, not the kind of offense you would associate with a breaking of a tradition that goes back to the beginning of a country. You know, again, if the president was accused of doing something, the former president, as former president, such as betraying his country, that's one thing. But this, the cases in District of Columbia, the cases in Georgia, seem awfully dubious. And in some of these cases, they are being brought with in a situation where the jury pool is heavily Democratic, very heavily Democratic. In some cases, and it must be said with sadness, heavily Black. And I think that they see an opportunity here to make a political advance. I'm not sure the country will see that, although CNN had a report of a poll this morning that showed the great majority of Americans approve of the indictment of Donald Trump. Well,
right.
I want to know how that question was phrased. I want you to how the question was phrased.
I was reading something by Byron York analyzing that poll you're talking about, and he didn't understand it. He said 60% of the people approve of the indictment, but 72% think it's political. Same group, same people. And so, I mean, that sounds to me like maybe they were interviewing different people or samples, because those are two entirely different conclusions. If you like the indictment but you think it's political, then I guess you don't really understand what the role of the district attorney is, Bill.
Well, that's, I think, a good point again. I mean, I'd like to know what that poll was, or how it was handled, how it was phrased, how people were approached, which people were approached. And I guess we'll never know because it hasn't been released. We are in a very sad time. It's a very sad time because the country already is in trouble. It's in a lot of trouble. It's in a lot of trouble in its foreign policy. I mean, I see around the world how countries are starting to ignore the United States and go off on their own and do things that they feel are in their interest without our approval. The president seems to feel that the biggest enemy of the United States is Israel. He won't invite Netanyahu to come to the White House because he doesn't like what he's doing internally in Israel. but everybody else gets an invitation. I mean, what
right.
I see here, first of all, in this administration, more and more is the heavy hand of Barack Obama, because many of the policies they're now pursuing were his policies, and some of the people were his people. And again, the press is asleep, or maybe it's awake and wants to be woke besides from being awake. But
right.
a time when our institutions are breaking down, and when institutions break down, the society begins to break down.
That's
and
right.
I really do fear, I fear for this country's future, because when you look at next year's presidential election on the Democratic side, who do you have?
Mm-hmm.
Who do you have? You have an impaired president who sometimes doesn't know where he is. We have a vice president who's a public embarrassment. And if they both were out of the picture, who would you have then who was acceptable to the left wing of the party? A bunch of socialists. On the Republican side, you have a good bench, an excellent bench, but you have a man, Donald Trump, who's in trouble and will get possibly into worse trouble as a man who dominates the voting bloc of the party. So a very, very sad time. If there was ever a time for a third party, it's now, but I don't think we're going to have it.
Right, or perhaps they may not even be able to win. If there was a third party, because I think a third party would more than likely take votes from the Republican or for Trump if he was running. A couple of quick things about New York, Bill, and then I want to get into other topics. I saw the mayor of New York. Oh, no, before I get to the mayor. Somebody sent me a joke from New York that sort of goes like this, that Donald Trump's mistake was to have an affair with this woman, or an allegation of an affair. Had he killed her in Central Park and just shot her 50 times, nothing would have happened to him. Speaking
that's
of
right.
the district attorney. Now, that's an exaggeration, perhaps, that joke. But I think you know what I'm talking about, Bill. This is a district attorney who has a very selective sense of justice, Bill.
Obviously, this is a man who believes that justice is simply an extension of politics. You know, remember that the last generation was brought up on the notion that the personal was political, which is wrong in a democracy. The personal is never political in a democracy. Also brought up by the notion, as penned by one of the woke philosophers of the 1960s, that the truth is what supports progressive causes. In other words, if it supports progressive causes, it must be the truth. And those are pretty dangerous ideas.
Absolutely. The other thing I wanted to mention, I did see today during lunchtime that the mayor of New York and I guess the police chief were both warning potential demonstrators to behave and so on. I have to believe, Bill, that there are people in New York wondering why it took the mayor until now to make a statement like that. Because New York is pretty unsafe, and if the mayor thinks
yes.
that this is the biggest threat facing the city, I'm not going to defend anybody who engages in violence in the name of Trump. I don't defend that. But it's not like New York is the New York that you remember under Giuliani, Bill.
No. He was a very different mayor, and it was a very different time. Now, Giuliani, in the years since he left office, has become a little kooky. But when he was mayor, he was called America's mayor. Remember, after 9/11, he handled it so well, handled the city well, completely nonpartisan, was highly respected. But he went on to do other things. What is particularly outrageous is the implication in some of the comments that violence would be started by Trump's supporters. I find that obnoxious. I mean, it is not – I know of no situation, including January 6th, where the president specifically said go peacefully and demonstrate, where Trump has been accused of starting violence. I mean, does he engage it sometimes in fiery speech? Yes, he does. But encouraging violence specifically, no. And I think it was wrong of some of the phraseology that was used this morning. I think they even went after Congresswoman, what's her name? The one from
Margaret
South
Taylor.
Carolina.
Yeah, Taylor, I think it is, MTG.
Yes, Taylor.
They call her MTG.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever her name is.
Yes.
I know who you're talking.
Yes.
She was on 60 Minutes last night.
That's exactly right. And
Margaret Taylor something, or
Green,
there's Marjorie Taylor Greene.
That's it.
Marjorie Taylor
yeah.
Greene. And Congresswoman
right.
Green is kooky. I mean, she's not my cup of tea, but you
no.
don't warn about a particular crime. She's never encouraged violence. That's something else. And I mean, just any words that are strong. Oh, they are encouraging violence. No, they're not. People who encourage violence encourage violence. They go out and say, go out and riot. Go out and burn down the police precinct, which, of course, we've seen happen. But now when virtually any strongly worded action is an endorsement of violence, I'm sorry, we're going in the wrong direction.
No, I was saying you've had members of Congress, Maxine Waters among them, say some pretty outrageous
oh, yes.
things. And
oh,
that tends to go in one ear and out the other. But, well, we'll keep an eye on the situation for the next couple of days. Let me take a break, Bill. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the world, because the world is pretty crazy these days. We'll be right back with our friend Bill. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, talking, of course, about the Trump indictment and New York City and all of the good stuff happening there. We want to get into the world right now, Bill, because you hinted at some of that a few minutes ago about the problems in the world, and there are many. But I thought, I don't know whether this is a coincidence or not, but 75 years ago today, the Marshall Plan was announced or put in motion, and that was a great performance by the United States, the Marshall Plan. It probably saved Western Europe from not necessarily an invasion from the Soviets, but certainly from all the economic troubles of World War II, and that was a great moment for the United States. There's nothing like that right now, Bill. There's nothing that comes close to that and what the American president is doing today, Bill.
That's exactly right. The vice president was just in Africa, and I don't know what she was doing in Africa. I don't know if she knows where Africa is, but she was just in Africa. But the president seems very, very inactive. Our enemies are not inactive. They're very active, but the president doesn't seem all that interested. The Marshall Plan, for members of the audience who were very young, was a plan by which the United States would economically help Europe to recover from World War II. It was actually developed by Harry Truman, the president, but Truman was not popular at the time, and he voluntarily decided to call it the Marshall Plan and attribute it to the popular Secretary of State, George C. Marshall. Because any time you're talking about something that's going to cost a lot of money, it's going to be controversial. It went through. It was very effective in stopping the spread of communism in Europe, and in rebuilding Europe as a prosperous continent with which the United States had friendly relations. That included the recent enemy of Germany. Germany was now considered a potential ally after having caused the war in Europe, and, of course, emerged as an ally of the West. Or at least West Germany did. East Germany was still under communist control. Very important step in American history. Got America involved in peace building in foreign countries, an involvement that is somewhat more limited today. But today you have a very unimaginative administration. We are facing four crises simultaneously. One is Ukraine. The other is Iran. The third is North Korea. And the fourth is China. It's very rare that we have that many at one time, and none of them are going well. And one of the reasons they're not going well is that nobody fears the United States. Nobody really believes the United States is going to do anything drastic against Iran, which seems to have quite a lobby in Washington, possibly in the person of Barack Obama. Nobody believes that the United States is really going to go all out with aid to Ukraine. The aid seems to be grudging and coming, and it has been very helpful to Ukraine. But there really is no Ukraine policy. If you look at it carefully, the president has never delivered a speech about Ukraine from the Oval Office, which the issue compels and calls for. We don't really know if the United States will ever commit troops or form a greater and new alliance to fight the Russians. We seem to simply be supplying aid to Ukraine with an aimless policy. In North Korea, the North Koreans go on to test their advanced weapons. There does not seem to be any great response from the United States. And, of course, the biggest threat coming from a China that even our chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Milley, says, a China that is convinced it will someday be at war with the United States and is acting accordingly, in other words, building a major military force. General Milley also said that the Chinese expect to take Taiwan by 2027. Well, that's only 4 years away.
Wow.
And is building a military force for that purpose. What are we doing? Well, I guess we have some words coming that are nice, and we may be reinforcing some aspects of our Pacific defenses, but we're not building those defenses. We're not building the number of ships we should be building. We're not building the number of planes we should be building. We are not strengthening our alliances. We're just there. And
right.
The president still refuses to refer to China as an enemy of the United States. He seems to regard it as a competitor, but not an enemy, and I don't think it is fair to the American people to let this situation go on without a presidential statement making it clear that we will defend Taiwan, that we will make sure it doesn't fall into Chinese hands, and that this may mean some sacrifice for the United States. He would explain why it is necessary to defend Taiwan, and part of it is to make sure our alliances in the Western Pacific remain intact, that people don't lose confidence in us.
Right. Well, there's something else, too, happening, Bill, around the world, and that is that the American dollar, people are walking away from it. Brazil,
yes,
and China just signed an agreement, and they're going to use their local currencies. Other countries apparently are doing the same thing, so they're not seeing the American dollar anymore as the currency that it has always been. You have a situation where I think China is clearly going around the world saying, we're the future, the United States is the past, and this is how they're persuading, I think, countries around the world to get on the China train, if you will. And we don't seem to have a president who cares a great deal about that. In fact, I think the only thing that this president cares about, Bill, well, two things, I guess, climate change and people who wear MAGA hats. It seems to be,
yes,
the only two things that he ever talks about, Bill. Climate change, whatever that means, and MAGA hats, people wearing these MAGA hats who apparently they are going to be a threat to the country, all those people wearing MAGA hats, more of a threat to the country than China building a navy that could rival the United States in a few years, Bill.
Yes, well, the Chinese Navy is now larger than the United States Navy. It is not as good qualitatively, but, you know, there is simply a point where the sheer size of a military force becomes decisive. And also, there is absolutely nothing for the Chinese to fear in the upcoming generations in the United States. The young generation seems completely indifferent to foreign policy, and indifferent, really, if polls are accurate, to the future of their country. They've gone to left-wing schools that taught them that America is a very defective place, and I don't think they object very much to that description. We are in a lot of trouble. I think it is a time in American history when the very institutions we depend on, the very foundations of the country, are in themselves very serious trouble, and there is no guarantee that this country will continue. If it does continue, there's no guarantee it will be free, and there's no guarantee that it will have influence around the world any greater than the influence that the Russians had after the collapse of communism. Their influence,
right,
began to diminish considerably, and even today, even though, ironically, Surveys show that Russia has gained in prestige in the last year, unbelievably, but they still lack the influence that the United States still has. We are giving up that influence.
Yes. One thing I wanted to mention to Bill about the military, something that is really starting to concern me is that we're not recruiting people into the military. There doesn't seem to be that, you know, that drive or that passion that, you know, drove young men and women, I guess, into the military after 9/11 or after Iraq or whatever, where it seemed like everybody understood why you had to serve your country because your country was in dire trouble, you know, from terrorism. That is gone. You don't see that same passion for serving in the country, and now you're starting to have shortages that could affect, you know, the number of troops you have. And the president doesn't seem to understand that or wants to talk about it. I mean, does the president understand that he may have to be issuing a draft notice if we have to go into a war over Taiwan? Because I don't think we can fight that war with the army we have, Bill.
No, we can't. The army we have is being trained to be woke. And wokeism has even infected the United States service academies. I saw just yesterday that the Air Force Academy, cadets are now discouraged from using terms like a mother and father. I mean, this is how bad it's gotten. How did this get into the military academies? Who did it? You'll never get any reporting from the woke press. But
right.
This is obviously not coming from military officers. This is coming from civilians, from civilian employees. And whether they're forced by political people to hire these individuals, I don't know. But I do know that one person at the Pentagon, a woman, had to be removed from office because they discovered some anti-white tweets. And they felt that she had to go, despite the fact that being anti-white doesn't seem to be a problem. But
right.
I think that we are weakening the military. There is no incentive on the part of the Democratic Party to strengthen the military. It is true that they're getting a few more dollars this year in their budget, but that's been eaten up by inflation already. And
right.
we
and
are
what you need. No, I was going to say what we need is soldiers right now. The money, always need money. But what we need is more and more young men graduating from high school and saying, I'm going to go into the Army, as one of my sons did, who went into the Army, and he was driven there by patriotic reasons. That's what I don't see. I'm not saying that the Army is not patriotic. I'm sure there are many patriotic young men. But there are many who are simply saying, that's not for me. And you have to ask yourself the question, how did that happen? How did we go from having all these young men who wanted to serve their country and protect their country after 9/11 to where we are now? Obviously, it has a lot to do with leadership, Bill. 8 years of Obama and 2.5 of Biden, you know, they do take their toll, Bill.
Well, absolutely. And these things happen over time, and people don't realize they're happening. I mean, what you have in Washington today in a Democratic administration is a very different kind of Democratic administration that we would have had years ago at a time when the Democratic Party really was the party of national defense. We forget that that's how the modern Democratic Party grew. Not only as a party of the New Deal and Harry Truman's Fair Deal, but as the party of national defense that believed in a strong national defense to prevent wars. Today, you look at Congress. First of all, you can barely find any outstanding Democrat who wants to present himself or herself as a representative of the majority of the American people. They're now the ones who are loudest or the wokest. And the wokest who see only their ideology, and that's it. I mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast the mayor of Los Angeles, recently elected. She is a devoted fan of Fidel Castro. Now, for goodness sake, who would want to have, as mayor of an American city, someone who has been a supporter of Fidel Castro? But she is, and now they're
right.
talking about And now they're talking about candidates to replace Dianne Feinstein in the United States Senate from California. And there is a plentiful group of woke, left-wing Democrats who would like to promote Senator Feinstein, who has been known over the years for her moderation.
Right.
The, you know,
she's
the,
been a good senator, really, as good as you're going to get from California.
Yes, I think. From California, but they don't want anyone like her. She did not even, in the last time she ran, have the support of her party. She ran as a Democrat. She ran on the Democratic ticket, but the party would not formally endorse her because she is the wrong race. She is the wrong religion. They want somebody more along the lines of the left wing of the Democratic Party. And in fact, the some of the leading candidates are, again, followers of Fidel Castro. An outrageous situation.
No, that's right. It's an outrageous situation altogether. Bill, one quick thing I wanted to bring up. OPEC production went down. Talk about international problems. OPEC decided to reduce production. Now, that shouldn't be a problem for the United States because we've got plenty of oil in Texas and in Alaska, but I guess it is going to be a problem because this administration prefers oil from other countries than the United States, Bill.
That's the outrage. They believe that they're doing something for the environment by making us dependent on foreign oil again. When President Trump left office, this country was energy independent, and we didn't need foreign oil. We need it again. And again, the American people seem so lackadaisical about a response. They kind of accepted it. I think the pandemic did enormous damage to American politics. We became a kind of nation of lambs, just taking orders. Americans know that we can produce enough oil to meet our own needs, but they're told at the same time that if you're in favor of that, you're in favor of destroying the planet. So they're quiet about it.
Right.
They don't say a thing.
Yeah, no. Who wants to be in favor of destroying the planet, right?
Yes.
Yeah, who wants to have a demonstration in front of their office saying, you want to destroy the planet because you want to pump more oil in Texas, Bill? Who wants that?
Yes. Well, you know, some of these corporations have gone right along with that line. They have become woke. I can't believe that they actually believe this stuff, but they're probably doing it because they're paying essentially protection money. And they're taking policies that are protection policies. It protects them from being burned down. And that's a sad way to run a country.
That's right. One last point I wanted to mention, Bill. Senator Manchin of West Virginia appears to be in a little fight with the White House. Senator Manchin claims that the Inflation Reduction Act that he made possible, without his vote it would have never happened, that he somehow or another, what he voted for is not what the White House is implementing. I guess that's what he's saying. But how do you react to that? Because was he that naive to think that this White House was actually going to focus on fossil fuel expansion rather than climate change? I mean, was he that naive, Bill?
I guess he was either naive or he just got taken in by them. Joe Manchin is fundamentally a Republican running in the state of West Virginia, which used to be a solid Democratic state, it isn't any longer. He has been a Republican, been a Democrat, who's been able to survive by taking fundamentally Republican positions. And I think the Democratic Party would much prefer that it have a different kind of senator from West Virginia, but Manchin is probably the best they're going to get, considering the state's movement to the right. I think Manchin realizes that he can be defeated in the next election, and I don't know what his future is going to be. There had been some talk that he himself might run for president, and he probably would be a pretty good president, actually, but I just think it's only talk. The reason he's so important, of course, is that the Senate is so closely divided, and
right.
And several senators are out. Well, the one from Pennsylvania who was suffering from severe medical problems, I think came back to the Senate, although I don't know what his actual medical condition is. And ironically, the just mentioned Dianne Feinstein has been out. I think she'll be returning soon. But if they are out and cannot vote, then the Democrats don't have a majority in the Senate. And that is something they don't want to lose because they have already lost their majority in the House.
Right. And it's interesting how important a majority in the Senate could be. If the Republicans had a majority in the Senate, even 51-49, some of these investigations would be going on a lot better, because the House can only do so much. But if you could have a Senate House investigation like, you know, we've done in the past, that I think would get to the bottom of all this stuff about Twitter and Facebook and social media. But unfortunately, you can only do so much with a House bill.
That's exactly right. You've got to have both houses of Congress, and you have to have enough cushion to prevent members of your own party from going over to the opposition. Now, we will have another congressional election next year with the presidential election, and I really do think that that election can be important enough to decide the future of the United States as what the kind of country we want to be. I think it'll be an absolutely brutal election, absolutely brutal.
Yes.
And I think this year's run-up will be brutal. I think we are in dangerous times.
We certainly are. And I want to thank you, as always, for joining us, Bill. Keep an eye on what's going on there in New York. We'll check with Urgent Agenda over the next couple of days. Let us know if you see Donald Trump. Tell him that we wish him the best.
I will tell him.
All right. Thank you for your time, and keep up the great work at Urgent Agenda, and we'll talk next week.
We certainly will.
Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.